Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about myths. The myths we believe, the things we tell ourselves and each other, the things other people tell us, the things we're hearing on the radio and the TV about what we can do and what we can't do and why we can and how we can, the things that believing them make it impossible for us to do the things we really need to do in our lives and be the people we really are. I'm also going to talk a little bit about roles and how they play themselves out in our life. And then I'm going to play the songs of a remarkable singer-songwriter, Kenny Rankin. This is in the nature of a memorial because Kenny Rankin died this month. And I'm a big fan. And so I'm playing his music. Anyway, hang on. Here comes the show. To The Lynn Show, which is today being brought to you by Asheville Hot Air Balloons in Asheville, North Carolina. Are you overwhelmed by all the unexpected things that are happening in our world? As a therapist, I know that one of the best ways to deal with difficult problems is sometimes just to take a break from them. And there is no better break than getting up above it all in a hot air balloon. Your burdens will lift, your perspective will change, and you'll feel liberated. It's fun, it's therapeutic, and it's cheaper than therapy. Tell them that you heard about Asheville Hot Air Balloons on The Lynn Show, and contact Asheville Hot Air Balloons either at their website, AshevilleHotAirBalloons.com, or call them at 828-667-9943. That's 828-667-9943. Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. Today I want to talk a little bit about some myths that we believe in this culture. I talked a lot about that at the beginning of the year, and we'll probably do that at the beginning of every year, but it's come up so much in my practice lately. Oh, gosh, well, maybe I need, just in case there's somebody who hasn't heard the show before, let me tell you something about who I am and what I do here before I talk to you about myths. So my name is Lynn, and I'm a psychotherapist. I am licensed to practice psychotherapy in the state of California as well as the state of Florida, which is where I am currently living. For many, many years, I was in private practice in the way that most people are. People came to my office and sat opposite me on a couch or a chair, and we talked to each other about whatever it was that was problematic for them. But since I moved to Florida through a series of unexpected accidents, which I have explained, but I'm not going to explain today, I wound up doing this practice on the telephone. Although I, as many, many people do, thought that that probably didn't work, it actually does work, or at least it works for me and the people that I talk to. I have a website. It's called thelynshow.com, and you spell Lynn with an E at the end, so it's thelynneshow.com. And I have written an article about phone therapy called Psychotherapy on the Go, and you can get it on my website if you have some interest in therapy on the phone or if you're just curious. So I have this private practice. I've been practicing psychotherapy easily 30 years now. And so I have a lot of experience of what are the kinds of things that get in people's way, stop them from doing whatever it is that they want to do. And I wrote a lot of that down in my book called When You Can, You Will. And actually the myths I'm going to talk about today refer really directly to the title. I suppose I ought to say the book is available on the website as well if you are curious about it, or its workbook or the audiobook. And in this show, I am interested in, dedicated to, attempting to help people who listen discover, if they don't already know, who they really are, and when you know it, if you know it, to begin to express that more in your life than you may have been doing before. I have to say over and over again that it's my experience that many, many, many of us have hidden aspects of ourselves undercover because they didn't work somehow in our early life. It may be through no fault of anybody's that someone decided to pretend that they weren't as smart as they were or as talented, or to pretend that they were sicker than they are or more accident-prone. Families can require a lot of things from children, and children are eager. We all were eager to be whatever it was the system that we grew up in needed. So if your parents needed somebody to take care of, then you might have figured out ways to catch more colds or fall down or not do so good in school or get sad or scared or be apprehensive about taking on new challenges or however you created that so that your parents could feel like good parents and take care of you. If your parents felt that you were a reflection on them, and therefore if you got your socks dirty or you didn't get straight A's or you talked out of turn or whatever it was that you did that embarrassed them, you learned very quickly how to keep your socks clean and not say anything wrong. But when you did that, one or the others of these things, you put undercover, you know, I like to call that the demonstrating who we had to be, that's our cover story, like a spy, right? It's something that may even be real for us, but it's not the whole story. The whole story contains the undercover, the way in which you are not accident prone. You don't care about getting your socks dirty. You are spontaneous, interesting, clever, healthy. These things are also still true of you, but undercover, because You learned, as we all did, that some things just don't work. They don't play. And we learn to hide them. So we're all acting in ways that are not exactly who we really are. And this show is an attempt to help you first discover that that may be true for you, second, begin to look at what you might be hiding undercover, third, if you begin to find some of that stuff, to create environments in which it's safe for you to try that on. So in the first half of the show, I talk about the kinds of things, you know, the kinds of things I've been just talking about, that get between us and the things we want to do and the people that we want to be. And in the second half of the show, I usually interview somebody who made their living or their life with their art. That's all part of a series I do called Anatomy of an Artist. And I do that because people who have made their living or their life with an art form are people who, at least in that area of their life, are being who they are. You don't want to be an artist in this culture unless you have to. We're not artist encouraging in this culture. We're artist discouraging. But all the people that I interview have been true to their art, whether it's music or painting or acting or singing or writing or dancing or sculpting, any art form. And in fact, I interviewed somebody whose art is politics. So I have a pretty broad way of describing it. And you'll hear, if you listen to the next shows I'm going to do are all writers, and we talk a lot about passion, the passion for writing, because pretty much everybody, there are 8 writers who I interviewed at a convention for Florida Mystery Writers, and pretty much all of them do something else for a living or have done something else for a living, but were compelled to do this as well. So, for the first half of the show, I talk about why you get stuck, why you can't do what you want to do, and in the second half, I interview artists. And then occasionally, unfortunately, an artist that I have had particular regard for dies. And that happened last week. Kenny Rankin, just a wonderful singer, songwriter, died. And when that happens, I like to do a memorial to that person, and if it's a musician, to play some of their music. So in the first half of the show, I'm going to talk about these myths, and in the second half of the show, I'm going to play a bunch of songs that Kenny Rankin made famous, and a couple that you may not have heard him do, because, oh my God, the range, he did everything. So, to start out, I'm going to talk about the myths. I'm doing this because the last few days this has come up a lot in the conversations that I've had with clients. We live in a culture, I like to call it the Nike culture. I'm sure you all understand what I'm talking about. Nike made a fortune trying to tell us that we could just do it. We're the culture that believes that if you put the word just in front of the sentence, things which used to be impossible to do are now simple, easy, piece of cake. Of course, this is a blatant lie, and everybody knows it. I'm quite sure there isn't anyone listening to me today who has not had the experience of wanting to do something, trying to do it, and being unable to do it. Not to mention observing loved ones and friends. We all know the weight loss thing, right? The gyms that we joined and the equipment that we bought and the diets that we tried. We all know the smoking thing or the drinking thing, and if we don't know it for ourselves, we know it for somebody else. But there are the less obvious things. A friend of yours hurts your feelings. Your feelings then about this person have changed dramatically, and you want to be able to say this, but you aren't able to. So you go on pretending that the relationship has not altered, or you let it fall away and the other person doesn't know why and you feel unsatisfied. Or maybe you've got stuff hanging around from your childhood that you didn't tell your parents, that you want to clear the air with. Or maybe you just want to stop biting your nails or clean up your room. I've got that one. I've got clutter. I hate it, and I really want it to be neat. I grew up in a house where everything was in its place, and it was gorgeous and clean and neat, and my mother would be horrified to see my office. But I don't somehow get around to doing it. And it isn't that I don't want to, and it isn't that I don't often try. And don't you know somebody who wanted to go back to graduate school, or get a high school diploma, or move from the state they're in, or get a divorce, or marry the person they've been dating for a long time but not been sort of unable to get off the dime. I could go on and on and on with the things that we all either have experienced in our own lives or have seen other people struggle with. We've got this myth in this culture that if at first you don't succeed, you try again. And then if you don't succeed, you try again. And then if you don't succeed, you can. And the implication is that if you just keep trying, you'll get it, because trying is all it is. But it's not true. And it's so sad for me to listen to people saying, well, I can do that, I'll do this, and then to hear them struggling and disappointed. Not only didn't they do it, but now they're disappointed in themselves, because the myth tells them that they could just do it. So today I'm talking about the fact that if there's something that you want to do, something that you've tried to do, maybe you think your happiness or your health or your well-being in some way depends on your doing this thing or stopping doing something, and you haven't been able to do it, please, don't add to the disappointment of not being able to do it the pain of recrimination that tells you that you should have been able to do it. Believe me, there's a good reason that you can't do it. And I am hopeful that if you continue to listen to the show, I'm going to say something that's going to help you understand why you can't do it, why you can't access that part of yourself, be that part of yourself that you may even know exists and are not able to bring out, to demonstrate. In the last, not the last few weeks, because in the last few weeks I was just playing Michael Royal's interviews, which were really interesting. But before that, I was talking about the roles that we play in our families, our family of origin, of course, to begin with, how we learn what the system requires of us. It's a little bit of what I was talking about before. You know, we figure it out. I have a client who figured out very young that her father, who was a rageaholic and occasionally violent, would take it out on her, but if she took it, he would not take it out on the younger siblings. And so she decided that it was her role to be the lightning rod. And that's a role she's continued to play. So we can learn, really, roles that are not in our long-term best interests. Sometimes not even in our short-term best interests, as this young woman took a lot of stuff that was not good for her. But once we've learned a role, then we think that's all there is. I don't know how many times I've heard people say to me, well, that's just how I am. But it's not true. It is not just how you are or just who you are. And if you're interested, I talk a lot about this, about how we became who we were and how we might could change who we are and how to figure out why that happened in earlier shows. And you can do that by going up on the website, thelinshow.com, click on old podcasts, look for where I wrote about that, and click on that and listen. But today I wanted to do a little recap. I want to remind you that in addition to your birth family, there are now probably many, many other people in your life whom you have trained to expect you to be the person you have always been. Without realizing it, we instinctively duplicate the relationships we had with our family, and then our friends and lovers and spouses and children and neighbors and employers. Everybody becomes stand-in for family members. We choose people. It's instinctive, you know. We choose people who expect to be treated or pleased or protected or abused in just the same way that our family members did. And this guarantees that there will always be plenty of people in our lives who will be upset if we try to abandon our role. And that's, of course, the major reason that we don't change, that there are people in our lives who are attached to our being who we've always been. Your spouse and children, your close circle of friends, employer, employees, colleagues, college roommates, these people make up your current family with whom you today establish balance. And again, I talked a lot about balance in those early shows, and you can hear them on the website. You may be out of touch with your original family, but you cannot renounce your own need for balance. As long as you believe that you can only play the roles that you played in your family, I am just who I am, that's who I am, then you need other people to play the roles you denied or disowned. The roles that were once played by your family members are now being played by others. This is especially true, obviously, for spouses and lovers. You may think that you went looking for someone who is generous or good-looking or rich or intelligent or funny when you were seeking somebody actually to balance your role with theirs. The qualities that we had to deny as children but need in order to become whole are the qualities we find irresistible in others. It is this need to create balance that draws us to one another. You probably realize that your choice of partner or mate wasn't random or accidental, but you may not realize that this choice was based on your need to supply yourself with qualities that you are missing. I see this over and over again. It's a source of distress to so many clients, but we often see a spendthrift with a penny pincher, a gadabout with a stay-at-home, a party animal with a recluse, a religious zealot, and I have seen this over and over with an atheist, somebody with a short fuse, somebody who never gets angry, a coward with a daredevil, and you can see them tugging at one another, pulling one another, right? Stephen Sondheim said it so well in Send in the Clowns, one who keeps tearing around with one who can't move. Unfortunately, as long as you think of the qualities that you had to deny as bad, you can't appreciate them in others. Consequently, you often hear people admitting, really puzzled by this, that the very quality that once attracted them to their lover is now the one they cannot stand and want the other one to change. This is a constant. This comes up over and over again in couple therapy, as you can imagine. Oh, I just loved that daredevil thing in him. You know, he would take these risks and I would stand by and applaud. It was so exciting. And he says, oh, and she was so sweet and she was so scared and she would stand there with her heart in her mouth and I would do this stuff and she would applaud. And now he's sick of how scared she is and how she worries and he wants her to stop it. And she's done with the risks. She don't want to hear about it anymore. But of course, what's going on here is that she needs to uncover that part of herself, which is a little bit more of a risk taker. And he has to recognize and admit that part of himself, which is a little scaredy cat. They assigned these to the other people. And then they did what we all do, which is they decided that what I am is really what's right and what you are is really what's wrong, so don't do it anymore. So much of couple therapy is not about couple therapy, but about trying to figure out who you are and what this other person's doing in your life, what they're doing for you, the gift. And I talk a lot more about this at some other time. This all comes out of my theory called salt in the wound, which if you're curious about, you can write to me and I'll send you something. So, are you thinking? Have you been thinking? Has this stimulated anything for you? Have you, if you are somebody who's been listening all along and maybe did your family pie, then you already know what's undercover for you. But if you're listening, just tuned in recently, just begin to consider it. Who did you pull into your life? What are the qualities that they demonstrate that you mostly find the most annoying or scary or upsetting or ugly? And then take a risk. Take a risk. Consider whether there's any of that in you and that you have been cheated, really, out of having access to it. You know the expression, put down the magnifying glass and pick up the mirror? See if you can do that. And I will be talking more about this, although I think in the next few weeks you're going to get mostly the interviews with the Florida mystery writers. They're really, really interesting. So, now, actually, I'm going to play a little public service announcement. And then I'm going to play lots and lots and lots of Kenny Rankin. So, here it all is.
Do you worry about how much someone else drinks? Do you feel that if the drinker cared about you, he or she would stop drinking to please you? Do you secretly try to smell the drinker's breath? Are you afraid to upset someone because it might set off a drinking bout? Do you have money problems because of someone else's drinking? Do you ever ride in a car with a driver who has been drinking? We know it's not easy dealing with a loved one who drinks too much, but there's help and hope. Al-Anon family groups are for anyone whose life has been affected by someone else's drinking. You'll meet others who share your feelings and your frustrations. Remember, before you can help a problem drinker, you need to help yourself first. For a meeting near you, call 1-888-4-ALANON. That's 1-888-425-2666. Online, visit www.alanonfamilygroups.org. A message from Al-Anon Family Groups.
I don't know about you, but whenever I say to somebody, do you know such and such as music, or you know such and such, right, and they don't know, I'm always surprised. Because I always think that any artist who's important to me will be known by everybody. And I have been surprised to discover that lots of people don't know who Kenny Rankin was. So if you are one of them, you're in for an amazing treat. And if you're not one of them, which is to say you're one of those people like me who is a big fan, you know the treat you're in for. I've been reading Kenny's website and some of what's been written about him since he died. And it's nice to know that there are other people in the world who were as touched by him and his music as I was. If you didn't know, and I didn't know, he did a version of the Beatles song Blackbird. I did know that. What I didn't know was that John Lennon and Paul McCartney loved the cover that he did so much, his version of it, that when they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they had him do Blackbird at their induction. I really can't think of a better accolade. I don't know. So I'm going to start out by playing Blackbird, which is not a song that he wrote. And then I think I'll say something in between all the songs because, generally speaking, this is not simply a music show, and anybody who turns in and hears song after song won't know what's going on. So here, as loved by Lennon and McCartney as by all of his friends and fans, is Kenny Rankin doing Blackbird. In the fourth grade, when he was asked to sing a song for the Christmas pageant, and he sang it, and his fourth grade teacher, Miss Pringle, came over and patted him on the head and said, "Kenneth, that was lovely." And right then and there, he decided that was what he was going to do. And so, boy, when they say you don't know the impact that you are having, that is for sure true. Clearly, Miss Pringle could not have foreseen what she was getting started with that casual compliment. But we all owe her. So that was Blackbird, a particularly well-known song, of course. But he didn't only cover other songs, other people's songs, and other people's rock and roll. Although it's hard to imagine anybody calling Blackbird rock and roll. Never mind. He also wrote. He wrote many songs, and two of them were recorded over and over and were hits for other people and are glorious. And I'm going to play them. I'm going to play Haven't We Met and Peaceful. So here again, the silky smooth Kenny Rankin.
I've ordered some rain for tomorrow. The sky will be sunny but wet. And out of nowhere you're suddenly there. And I say, yeah, pardon me, haven't we met? And I want us some sunshine with showers, and I've got my scenery set right there with a thump. Our umbrella's gonna burn when I say yeah. Pardon me, haven't we made an accident? Can happen, and into one I'm gonna slide. There's a good chance to get my hands on a little romance when two hearts collide. And I know that's just how it happened when Romeo met Juliet. Somewhere I read that old Romeo said, yeah, yeah. Pardon me, have a remember. And I know that is just how it happened when Romeo met Juliet. Somewhere I read that old Romeo said, yeah, yeah. Pardon me, he said, pardon me.
Maybe one day he will say, I'm a pretty nice. one bending over my shoulder. No better feeling in my ear. Oh, so peaceful, oh, so peaceful, oh, so peaceful here.
So if you're just tuning in and you've just been hearing a lot of music, beautiful, glorious music, and you're wondering what's going on, because this isn't what's usually happening on The Lynn Show, although I do quite often play music when I am playing a musician, an interview with a musician, but today what I'm doing is playing a retrospective memorial to Kenny Rankin, who died fairly recently, and the last two songs were two songs that Kenny wrote, and now I'm going to play a different aspect of him. You know, what I've been playing now has been pretty much pop music, guitar. The next two songs, which are My One and Only Love and When Sunny Gets Blue, are standard songs, and he does them with standard backing. They're absolutely beautiful. And so, without any more words, Kenny Rankin.
The very thought of you makes my heart sing like an April breeze on the wings of spring. And you appear in all your splendor, my one and only love. The shadows fall and spread their mystic charms in the hush of night while you're in. I feel your lips so warm, so tender, my one and only love. The touch of your hand is like heaven, a heaven that I've never known. The blush on your cheek whenever I speak tells me that you are my own. You fill my eager heart with such desire. Every kiss you give sets my soul on fire. I give myself in sweet surrender, my one and only. Thank you. just like heaven, a heaven that I've never known. The blush on your cheek whenever I speak tells me that you are my own. You fill my eager heart with such desire. Every kiss you give sets my soul on fire. I give myself in sweet surrender, my one and only Sunny gets blue, her eyes get gray and cloudy. Then the rain begins to fall. Bitter, 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 bitter. Love has gone, so what can matter? No sweet love of man comes to call. When Sunny gets blue, she breathes a sigh of sadness, like the wind that stirs the trees. Wind it sets and leaves to sway, like some violins are playing weird and haunting melodies. He but used to laugh, to hear her laugh, to see her smile. That is how she got on there. Since that sad affair, she's lost her smile, she's changed her style. Somehow she's not the same. Memories will fade, pretty dreams will rise up where her brother dreams. Hurry, new love, hurry. Kiss away his lonely tears. Hold her near when Sunny gets blue. Gets blue.
Something else that I want to tell you before I play the last song that I'm going to play of his in this show. Apparently, He appeared on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, those of you who are old enough to remember that. And Johnny Carson was so taken with him that he had Kenny Rankin appear on his show 20 times, which you probably know is a very big deal. And in addition to that, Johnny Carson was a musician himself and really interested in music, and he apparently wrote the liner notes to one of Kenny's albums. Also, apparently, Kenny was signed to Decca Records, and they call him, and a label mate of his was Bob Dylan, and Kenny winds up playing guitar on a groundbreaking album of Bob Dylan's. So this is a man who had an impact, even though it turns out lots of people don't know who I'm talking about when I say Kenny Rankin. The last song I'm going to play today is a song of his, and it's called What Matters Most. And so it seems to me that that's an appropriate way to end a retrospective and a memorial to a remarkable man. What Matters Most by Kenny Rankin. Matters most is that we loved at all. Song written and performed by Kenny Rankin, pretty much saying it all. I'm glad to have had an opportunity to play all of his music, but obviously I wish I had thought to do this before. So this is the end of this episode of The Lynn Show. And as I always say, I hope that you heard something in this show that you can use, something that you didn't know before, something that amused you or interested you or touched you, something that makes you want to come back. And I don't want to forget to thank Josh Hackney, who is the person who puts these shows together for me, and not only puts them together for me, but in this case managed to get me all of those wonderful songs so that I could play them for you. Josh Hackney, the IT computer electronics recording, you name it, he can do it, guru. And as I always say, if you need any of these things, you should go up on my website, thelinshow.com, and say, I need Josh, and I'll find him for you. So hopefully you have heard something in the show that's going to make you want to listen again. In the next few weeks, as I said, I'm probably going to be playing the interviews that I did at the Florida Mystery Writers Convention. And so I'm probably not going to talk that much about why people can't change, unless there's room in the shows, in which case I will certainly do it. Anyway, I hope that you will come back, because I will be here next week. And boy, I hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. See that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we're